Welcome into the Pursuit of Manliness podcast, where we are vigorously equipping men to pursue biblical manliness. On today's show, I get the opportunity to talk with Stephen Mansfield. Stephen Mansfield is a New York Times best-selling author and popular speaker who also leads a media training firm based in Washington, D.C. He first rose to global attention with his groundbreaking book, The Faith of George W. Bush, a bestseller that Time magazine credited with helping to shape the 2004 U.S. presidential election. The book was also a source for Oliver Stone's award-winning film, W. Stephen's humorous but fiery Mansfield's book, A Manly Man, has inspired men's events in the U.S. and abroad. His more recent, The Miracle of the Kurds, has been selected as Book of the Year by Rudolph, the leading Kurdish news service. And as a result of this book, Mansfield has become a respected voice of the Kurds against the evils of ISIS in the Middle East. Stephen speaks widely about men, leadership, faith, the lessons of history, and the forces that shape modern culture. He also leads a media training firm, the Mansfield Group, that has worked with top politicians, CEOs, rock stars, major publishing firms, and educational institutions around the world. On today's podcast, Stephen and I will talk about his passion to equip men and his concern for what is missing in this current generation. Stephen, in many ways, is leading the charge to re-engage our culture to have an accurate and healthy view of manliness, and it is exciting to hear what he has planned for the future. Now it is time for our show. Stephen, welcome to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast. It is an honor to have you with us today.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Hey, something I didn't know about you. I love that you're a man of God. I love your heart and passion to equip men. But maybe selfishly, my favorite thing about you is you're a Notre Dame Irish fan. How long have you been a Notre Dame fan?
Man, I have admired Notre Dame for years. And then I guest lectured there some years ago. And I walked around and had students tell me about Touchdown Jesus and so on. And of course, you know, the movie Rudy converts all of us, you know.
Amen.
Yeah, I'm now a crazed Notre Dame fan, but no question about it. Totally in.
I was just there a couple weeks ago, and God's favor still shines on Notre Dame, and Mary gave me the thumbs up, so all good. So.
I got to tell you that this last season was a downer, so I'm hoping we'll recover this season.
You know, it's like the day after Christmas. It makes you appreciate Christmas, and so we're looking forward to something better.
You betcha.
Hey, the truth is this, and I've shared this on different levels. One of the foundational moments to the start of this website, The Pursuit of Manliness, is reading your book, Mansfield's book, A Manly Man. I actually felt like a depression setting in as I was getting about halfway through it. But one of the things that you talk about in there that was a catalyst to this is the night you became a man, as you call it. Could you tell us what kind of led to that and what led you to write this book?
Oh, sure. It was absolutely a story that occurred while I was going in and out of the Middle East. And we were actually, I can tell people now, I didn't tell it in the book, but we were going in and out of Iraq to work with the Kurds. And I got stuck in Damascus. My paperwork wasn't quite right, so normally we went across the Syrian desert for about 10, 12 hours and then went into Kurdistan because we couldn't go through Turkey. But I got stuck in Damascus, and I happened to know a Syrian parliamentarian. Now, this is back long before the current civil war, so things were pretty stable. And when he saw that I was stuck in the hotel there, I was bored, didn't have a lot to do, waiting for my paperwork to go through, and it probably was never going to, he decided to have a party for me on the roof of a hotel in downtown Damascus. So he called together some of his parliamentarian friends and their security teams and all that, and we got on the roof, and, you know, it was a sweet gesture on his part, but when I got there, hardly anybody spoke English. I don't speak much Arabic at all. And so we kind of sat and looked at each other, and finally, one guy who said, who had just come in from the desert, still had his kefa on, you know, that cloth headdress they wear. He spoke enough English to say to me, "Do you have a son?" And I said, "I do." And he said, "What is his name?" And I said, "Jonathan." And he looks like he was announcing the second coming. He said suddenly, "Well, then you have a new name." And it turns out, I got somebody to explain it to me later, that when an Arab man has a son, it is such an honor to him that they actually use an honorary title for him, and it's the word Abu, which means father of, combined with a shortened version of the son's name. So they said to me, "Your name is Abu John," you know, again, father of, and then shortened version of Jonathan's name. When that was announced on that roof, I'm telling you what, party game began. Music got cranked up, food came out, cashews as big as your thumb, baklava, a great big naan and lamb. It was fantastic. And then the dancing began. And they started doing that Arab dancing that was so much fun. Well, this went on for hours, and we really couldn't talk to each other very much, but they were celebrating me as a father. And it was sweet, and it was beautiful, and I have to tell you, when I got back to the hotel about 4 in the morning, I sat there for a long time until the sun came up, and something had happened to me. Now, bear in mind, all of these people were Muslim, except for one guy who was a Syrian Christian. We could hardly talk, but something had changed in me, and what I realized was, even though I was in my early 30s, even though I'd been to college, I think I was working on a doctorate at the time, had a family, had two children, I was the number two guy at a big church in Nashville, never had any phase of manhood been celebrated in my life. You know, you go to high school, graduate from high school, and they have a party for you or whatever, you go to college, you get married, but there's not a ritual for celebrating our rites of passage as men. So when I was sitting in that Damascus hotel the next morning as the sun came up, I suddenly realized that's what was different about me. No aspect, no phase of manhood, no transition of manhood had ever been affirmed by other men in my life. Now, I had a father, he was a military man, I had good men around me, but we just don't have those rituals. For those of us who aren't Jewish, or Jews at least, have the bar mitzvah for Jewish boys when they turn 13 and become quote-unquote sons of the covenant. But nothing like that in my Protestant upbringing. And so I came back to the States, and I began to look around. I really realized that the men I could see in the mall and the men I knew, that they hadn't had manhood called out and affirmed in their lives. They might have read a good book or two about manhood, but none of them had really had mentors. None of them had really had men calling out manhood in their hearts. None of them had had any of those valuable rituals that sort of affirmed the transitions and the phases of righteous manhood. So it changed me, and it launched me into what I'm doing now, which is helping men to become great men and to reclaim what it means to be righteous men to the Lord.
Amen. I feel like there's so many guys who are chasing that, and they're never going to get it until, you know, either a discipleship relationship or somebody says, hey, let's for 12 months or whatever it looks like. You know, they just hunger for that attaboy or that affirmation, and we chase countless things, you know, to try to prove our manhood.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, a lot of times when men go to any kind of men's conference or they read books, what they're usually given is a list of things to and not to do. and, you know, so just stop touching that, stop looking at her, and, you know, don't do this, don't do that. And, you know, it's almost, I'm not trying to be harsh, but it's almost a condemnation service. It's almost a whole list of things you shouldn't be doing, and aren't you bad, you're a man, we know what's in your heart, stop it. And that's not calling out the best of what a noble man is meant to be. Manhood is a privilege. Manhood is something designed by God. Manhood is definitely meant for service. Yep. But manhood, the message of noble manhood cannot just be, don't look at her, stop masturbating, stop eating too much, aren't you a dog? It just can't be that kind of thing. It's got to be recovering the core of what a man is made to be. And I frankly think, I certainly believe in holiness, and I certainly believe in, you know, telling men there are certain behaviors that are sinful and destructive. Don't misunderstand, I'm not a coward on those issues. I find that men change most rapidly, not when they're condemned for what they're doing wrong, but when they're shown the glory of what it means to be a great man. Then they'll let go of the petty ways. Then they'll let go of the stupid stuff. You know, you have a real marriage with a vibrant sex life because you are a true man in your home and a true man to your wife, and it's romantic and it's powerful and it's passionate. Well, then you're not going to be flirting around with Susie Q, you know, down at the office, or, you know, coming close to having an affair with somebody you don't even know. I mean, you're not going to be doing stupid stuff. Porn falls and completely leaves your life and makes you just almost embarrassed when you've got a real woman you're living with, and she's a real woman because she's got a real man as a partner. So you understand how I tend to go. Absolutely. I tend to go with the positive rather than sit there and list all the negatives and have men crawl home condemned, wondering if they can ever make it happen. The second thing I want to say, and I'll say it very quickly, is that we also send the signal that men have to do this alone. And I don't believe that. I believe that men need to have a band of brothers. And I think that that's really how noble manhood is perfected in the lives of men. And so giving a man a list of things they should or shouldn't do alone misses the point.
And you recently wrote something about called Band of Brothers, and I've read it, and I agree. I think when they're awakened to the positive, man, then you go, okay, that's something to shoot for. That's something to aim at. And so...
Yeah, I, whatever I've accomplished in my life, I didn't accomplish it because somebody told me how bad I was otherwise. You know what I mean? They didn't, nobody said, well, you have no ability to write, to use nouns and verbs, you know, or whatever. They said, man, I read your stuff, I mean, it needs some work, but when I read what you write, it inspires me, it touches me. In other words, when somebody called me out, when somebody said I had a message, when somebody, you know, affirmed the good in me or gave me a vision for what a noble writer could be. I mean, I have a number of older male mentors, and what they did was they described the good in what I was doing, and then they said, you know, and it could be better if you'll do the following things. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really lit up my soul was when they described, they called out the good in me rather than just condemning the negative. And that I think, is how we need to handle noble manhood in the lives of men of our generation.
Absolutely. Yeah, hey, through my life, I've been blessed. I've had a godly father, godly father-in-law, but other men in the church that have kind of come alongside me and just kind of given me an accurate picture of what it looks like to be a man. Not all men get that, and I'm in a church, and so I had this tension as we try to reach men. I use the illustration that sometimes a church is like a man who walks into a maternity store. There's nothing for them there, and they're only there because their wife wants them to be there. From your perspective, you mentioned being on staff, but why do you believe our churches are struggling so hard to really connect with men on an authentic level?
Well, I got to tell you, frankly, I have some very strong opinions about this. I think usually we try to do men's ministry as just like a little group on the side of the church rather than weaving the message of noble manhood into the whole of what the church is. And so, you know, most churches have a little men's ministry and go, you know, they sit around and eat biscuits and gravy on Saturday morning and hear from a speaker or something. But men aren't meant just to sit around and stare at each other. They're meant to form up bands of brothers. They're meant to be busy. They're meant to be active. You know, they do these surveys where they put little girls and little boys separately in a room with all kinds of chairs and toys and stuff, and they just watch them. Inevitably, the little girls will turn chairs facing each other and say something nice about each other. I like your hair, or that's a cute dress. The boys, inevitably, when they come into the room, they turn two chairs side by side and look out at the rest of the world, and eventually one of them will say, hey, I bet I can beat you to that tree. Hey, I bet we can get Tommy to pull us in that wagon. Hey, I bet we can, you know. So they start designing something to do. So the approach of most churches, which is, first of all, to create a men's ministry as a subgroup off to the side of the church, and then second of all, give men something noble and valiant to do, not paint a vision for noble manhood and then get them busy doing it, is a huge mistake. Men want to be doing things. Men want to be up and at it. Men don't want to sit in a room and stare at each other and talk about their emotions. Men need to be challenged. They need to be coached, and they need to be busy. And I think that's where we missed it. The other thing I might say too is that a lot of what is emphasized in the church tend to be more feminine things. So your emotions and poetry and art. Now, men can be about those things. I certainly am about poetry and art. But if you're not careful, you can have a church that is leans very feminine in its approach. A lot of pastors now are beginning to change that, and they're beginning to realize that they've got to grow the church in a manly direction. Like one of my favorite pastors, Michael Fletcher, out in Fayetteville, South Carolina, who pastors Manna Church, he said, you know, that 80% of the people who work in churches are women. And he said, that's fine, they're awesome, but you're not going to grow a church with a dynamic men if you've got a church that's largely staffed by women. So he reversed it, and he had 80% men and 20% women. He's got a big old gigantic church right on the edge of Fort Bragg, and it really works. He's got a very manly church because that's what he punctuated. And the women love it because they're in a very masculine, protected, safe environment, and it works out great. And of course, men are growing dynamically and powerfully in that church. So that's my analysis. I simply think we can do it better and do it more as a central heart of the church rather than on the side.
Man, that's good. I think for far too long we've tried to make a male version of women's ministry. You know, as you said, tables and chairs, and just kind of the women get up and we sit in their spots. And so I love that. Men do things. So,
most men are bored. I mean, this is one of the great epidemics of our age, is that most men are bored. And most men, quite frankly, are bored in church. And so what we've got to do is stop asking men to circle up in the fellowship hall and stare at each other and say, what are you feeling, bro? and instead begin to do things and do them righteously. And I tell you what, the men's ministries that have awesome teaching for men, but at the same time, get them busy on short-term mission trips, get them busy making a difference in the community, even having the getaways and the fun and the retreat, you know, go up in the mountains and, you know, do things and do rowdy things and do extreme sports. That's where I really see the most of that dynamic works of God in the lives of men.
That's good. Hey, on your podcast, which I thoroughly enjoyed. On June 16th, you said, I quote, "What has become a real burn for me is my passion for men. I'm deeply concerned for manhood in our generation." You begin to touch on your concern for what's not being taught and what's not being said to engage men, but could you kind of share what you believe is missing in this current and the next generation as you look behind you and say, "I see these critical elements missing from the next generation"?
Yeah, I think we really have got to challenge men about what God intended manhood to be and really make that central. I think that's powerful. You know, several times in Scripture, God speaks to men or to a man, and he says to him, for example, when he speaks to Job at the end of the book of Job, he says, "Be a man. Prepare to defend yourself as a man." Or when David turns to his son Solomon, he says, "Prepare to be a man." And the word man there does not mean the same thing as that word in other parts of the Bible. It doesn't just mean male. It means the characteristics and traits of a man. Go out and perfect the characteristics and traits of what it means to be a man. And that's what we've got to teach our men. Then, I think that the second issue is that most men are trying to do that alone. And I think we've got to have band of brothers. So that's why I wrote that little booklet as an accompaniment to my book, Mansfield's Book of Manly Men. I think we've got to have teach men the skills that they've lost of building a band of brothers, a group of men who love you but aren't afraid of you. And I teach men that what they've got to do is get to the point where they've got a free fire zone, where anything that needs to be said to make me better will be said. Anything I can say to help and invest in them to make them better will be said. We'll help each other. We'll coach each other. We'll have some fun along the way. And then finally, the third thing is we've got to turn this towards the boys. Boys are an absolute torment today. The statistics of what's happening with young males in schools and behaviorally and criminally in this country, even in their own bodies, is horrible. And there's an African proverb that goes like this: if we do not initiate the boys, they will burn the village down. Mm. Well, that's what's going on with street gangs in our country. That's what's going on with ISIS. So, I'm passionate to do those three things. Teach men what godly, noble manhood is. Help them perfect it by building a band of brothers who hold them accountable and coach them in the ways to live out noble manhood. And then impart that to the boys and have those rituals and those training sessions and those dynamic connections that I certainly never had and that most men don't have.
You hit on something there about these guys who will speak into your life and vice versa. Just real quick, why do you think we have such a hard time telling the truth to each other?
Well, you know, because frankly, it's a lot of just pride. It's just Adamic pride. You know, it's built into our souls, and we're told to, you know, not to cry. We're told not to, you know, don't let them know too much about you. You know, don't expose too much. But, you know, I got to tell you, the most rapid change I see in the lives of men is when they've got a group of guys around them who are honest and transparent, who tell the truth. And I'll tell you what, when men begin to realize they're not alone in these battles, I mean, most men feel a lot of shame about the stuff they're doing that they know they shouldn't be doing. Or they feel a lot of shame about broken families and divorces and affairs and all that stuff. But you get them in a room with a leader. I'm thinking of one leader who's a dear friend of mine in Nashville. And he was a big-time builder in Nashville for a lot of years, but he ended up having a lot of affairs with the women that he was building houses for. God's cleaned up his life, and now he's a dynamic leader of men. But when he gets up and tells his story first, his story is worse than anybody else's in the room. And yet his marriage is together now, and his kids are doing fine, and he's rocking and helping men, you know, worldwide to step up into noble manhood. So the bottom line is, once a man realizes that he's not alone, everybody in the room has got a battle to fight, well then, you know, he realizes that he's got not only help in his own battles, but that he can be part of helping other guys in their battles. Like, you know, I'm out here in Washington, D.C. right now, and I go to a church where a lot of the Washington Redskins go. Well, you know, these guys may need help in, who knows, marriage or what have you, but they can help me to get in better physical shape, or maybe some of them can help me with my financial life, or maybe some of them can help me, you know, be a better father. So no matter what your story is, no matter what your weakness is, you've got something to contribute into the life of another man as he fights the great battles of his life, and he in turn can help you fight yours. And so you ask the question, you know, why aren't we transparent with each other? I think it's because, again, it's a function of walking alone. I'm willing to be transparent when the leader gets up and says, yeah, you know, I had serial affairs and blew up my life and hurt my wife, and I was a dog and I was disgusting and I blew up marriages, and God restored, and now I'm walking out noble manhood. I mean, when he says that, that's way beyond anything most men even think about being wrong in their lives. Sure. And suddenly there's this environment of transparency and honesty. So that's what a true band of brothers can do. And I think we've got to teach men the skill of rebuilding them, because the fact is most men are walking alone. And when you're walking alone, you're vulnerable, you're off balance, and you can't see about your life what you need to see to have meaningful change.
And what I love is, you know, with your books, what you write, and your websites and stuff, your desire is if there is a guy alone, you can equip them to get them going in the right direction to find these right guys. And I know you mentioned on a podcast you have a website you're working on called greatman.us. I'm excited to see what happens with that. Could you tell us kind of what that's about or what you hope to see come from it?
Yeah, up until now, you know, I've pretty much thought of what I'm doing with men as just an extension of my own life and work. So we made the greatman.us page. Just a page on my website, StephenMansfield.tv. But I realize I've got to get this thing taken out of just my own work and put it in a position where other people can be part of leading it and impacting lives. So we're about to launch a website that's called Great Man. It's probably going to be GreatMan.tv, by the way. We may change the name rather than GreatMan.us. I just didn't want men around the world to think we were saying GreatMan.us as in United States. I think that might be misunderstood. So I may make it GreatMan.tv. But anyway, we're going to launch a website here by the 1st of September. We're also going to have a Great Man podcast. Right now I do the Stephen Mansfield podcast, and I often talk about men's themes. But I'm going to do two podcasts a week, and one that's going to be on Great Man. So we'll have a Great Man site, we'll have the Great Man podcast, and then we're also going to have social media that's either Great Man or Go Great Man on Twitter. And this will really help men. It'll link them up to other leaders. It'll help network them locally. We're also going to have some gigantic conferences, you know, where we really teach, train men, but also have a lot of rowdiness and fun. So anyway, I want to see this Great Man effort really go global and impact men. And it's not about me. That's why I'm taking it off of my site. I want to see a lot of leaders rise and begin to impact other men, but I think we've got to love the church and include the church, but get outside the church and go broader than the church to have an impact in military and business and schools and everywhere that we can, obviously through sports. But certainly, I certainly am a devoted member of a church, but I don't want to see this thing just be contained within the church, even though the church is the main institution that, you know, budgets for men's ministry and men's outreach every year. We got to get this message of noble manhood out beyond the four walls of the church, and that's a lot of what I'm trying to do.
Absolutely, man. Stephen, I can't thank you enough for what your writing has meant for me. I believe my wife and children. I've given away a ton of your books, but let's just pretend there's a guy who's not familiar with you, your writing, your books, whatever. What are some great ways to get in touch with you and what you're doing right now?
I appreciate you asking that. My website is StephenMansfield.tv. On Twitter, you can follow me at Mansfield Writes. It's also Mansfield Writes on Facebook and every other social media. It's always Mansfield Writes, even if you take the app off. And so just get connected with us there right now. And very soon, within the next 6 weeks, we will be announcing both the new site, Great Man Podcast, and we'll start talking about Great Man events, too. So that's the best way to do it. Stay close to us on StephenMansfield.tv and also on Twitter at @MansfieldWrites.
Last question is this. You know, great leaders are readers. What are you currently reading right now that you might recommend to another guy?
Well, right now I'm reading a book of obituaries, believe it or not, written by William Buckley, the father of the conservative movement, and it really has challenged me. You know, there's this idea that when you get to the end of your, maybe you've even gone to conferences where they say, hey, write your obituary, write it the way you want it to read on the day you die. And it gets you looking at your life almost in reverse, you know, from the end of your life. And so by reading this book of creatively written obituaries, it's really challenged me. What do I want to have said at my funeral? What do I want to have said about my life? What do I want my life to mean? And I'm in my 50s, and for all I know, I've got decades more of life. So it's really caused me to kind of man up. And that's, by the way, why I read biographies, why I read the lives of great leaders in history, because I want them to challenge me and to call me to be better, to call me to live a life of meaning and significance. So anyway, odd as it is, that's what I'm reading right now. It's a book called The Torch Kept Lit. It's the obituaries written by the famous conservative writer and leader, William Buckley. I really am being challenged by it, but it's not specifically about manhood, but it certainly is challenging me about manhood.
Man, that's great. One of the keys to manhood is understand there's people that are going to come behind you, and there's a legacy left.
Yes.
So that's fantastic. I appreciate you doing that. Hey, Stephen, I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your day to be on our podcast, and I thank you for what you've meant to me and ministry and friends and stuff. So, I just want to say thanks for taking time and being on this podcast with us.
Well, you're very kind. Thanks for having me, and let's all build great men together.
Man, once again, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. It was an honor to have Stephen Mansfield on today. Again, I just want to remind you, Mansfield's book, A Manly Man, it's something that I think you definitely want to read before 2017 is over. If you haven't read it yet, you know what I'm talking about. I also want to encourage you, if you want to get in touch with us, you can shoot us an email, pursuemanliness@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. It's all at Pursue Manliness. Certainly our website, thepursuitofmanliness.com, where we share podcasts and blogs, things like that, just tools for your toolbox. And again, in our Facebook, we have a closed group, The Pursuit of Manliness, just to keep it real simple. It's just a group of guys just trying to get better together. We have videos and conversations, just different things that are happening there that you don't find any other places. So again, guys, I hope this was a blessing to you. I hope it's some kind of encouragement to your day. And I just hope and pray that you keep pursuing manliness. That you're loved by this king, and you ain't born to be no average Joe.